At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're talking about the Charlie Kirk conspiracies. We're talking about the atmosphere that we're in, where there's not a lot of trust. There's a lot of people asking questions, and rightfully so. This is not a piece to say don't ask questions, but this is more of an observation of what's going on around us and why are we believing certain things? Why are people believing certain things? When things are factually proving them wrong, why are we putting answers to places where we just don't have the answers yet and calling them fact? What is going on around us? We've been looking at the Charlie Kirk situation and the assassination from a kind of a 20,000 foot overview. Now I want to take it a little bit to a more of a micro level where you're right there, you're on the ground. I want to talk about that day and some of the conspiracy theories that are floating on or floating out around there. Maybe not super specifically, but just the logistics of this from what we supposedly know is fact. And then how anything else can really intersect with that and gain ground. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us to discuss all of this. I just want to start with just the basics on this here. There was a shooter on the roof. We have footage. We have security camera footage showing him climbing in. I don't know. I mean, it looks pretty clear cut to me. The family turned him in. So you have all these other people involved in this. It's not just this person who has no one around them. There's family. There's, you know, we got all the way down to like the chaplain friend or whatever that helped turn him in. There's multiple people. So to me, when you have so many people involved, that makes it really difficult to sell a conspiracy theory, especially one that says this wasn't even the right person. When everybody's like, "Yeah, it was. It's it's our family gun. It's his DNA's on it. He's on camera. There's this note. There's a lot of weird things about the notes and things like that. Sure, but there's a lot of things here that are like you can't discount the human element, and there's a lot of human element to this around this guy.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. And that's why when some of these conspiracy theories started coming about, it was, I wouldn't say shocking. I was surprised. It's a good word. Surprised because of all these other elements that weren't present for all the other cases in history that there were conspiracy theories around, some proven, some unproven. But when you have a lot of data, like you said, other individuals involved, for me, it was definitely the family being involved in this. His compliance as a 20-year-old to go along with being turned in, that was major for me because that's unusual. And also compared to other things too, everyone, 3,000 people heard one shot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that's another data point as well. So what happens is it makes it harder to go down that road of maybe. With other options. And so every time you have hard evidence, and DNA is good, very good on this, but there could be other DNA. So again, there's a maybe there if you want a conspiracy theory about someone else being involved. But I have been involved in so many big things in the FBI. And every time you have more than one person involved, two people, three people, it starts the ability to maintain a conspiracy in private, to keep it secret, it just diminishes. I mean, just look at the Adelsons.
Right?
Yeah. You know, anytime you have a couple morons. So first of all, think about this. If you're going to kill someone, you're a moron. You've got a lot of stupid things going on in your life. Mm-hmm. And so morons gravitate towards them, other morons, including governments, because governments, if governments are going to conspire together to assassinate someone, that's a government of morons. And morons have leakage. And so that's why it's so hard to pull these things off. Grant, I got the stats. It can happen, but it becomes very, very hard. And so what becomes hard is is to negate the conspiracy theory. In other words, if there's actually data that's being leaked out, because there's much more plausibility to maybe it, those conspiracy theories start gaining some more momentum and some more weight, because every time you explore a new thought and idea and trying to get data to support it, you might not get a lot of data, but you might get like one thing that says, oh, that's a possibility here, so we can explore this. In other words, but we're not getting that kind of leakage here, at least not that I'm seeing.
I feel like sometimes the society that we live in mistakes opportunity for conspiracy, especially in a case like this, where in order to seize the opportunity to get behind something like this and then essentially hijack it for your own beliefs, whatever it may be, even if they're not even that of Charlie Kirk, right, but you're going to go and pretend they were somehow, that feeds the conspiracy. Well, if they're getting behind this, they must have had something to do with his death. No, they've just been waiting for an opportunity, and the door opened, and this moron opened it.
Yeah.
And it's like hyenas just waiting, you know, they're waiting for it to happen. When something happens, okay, whatever that's going to be, we don't have the exact, you know, complete game plan here or blueprint to what we're going to do. But when something of this nature happens, we're going to swoop in and we're going to be the group behind it. And we're going to use this horrible tragedy to further our agenda that, again, may have nothing to do with what Charlie Kirk was believing or speaking of, but if we can get enough people behind it and think that, oh my gosh, you know, this is, you got to be in, you're either here, you're with us, or you're against us. Right. That's what it goes into. And if everybody feels special and you put enough fireworks on the stage, you got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Going to be like, all right. And it looks weird as shit. Because it is weird as shit. Because you have a mix of people who are genuinely grieving, who are genuinely trying to figure out what the hell just happened to someone they genuinely care about, mixed with nefarious individuals who come in and go, well, this is the best fucking thing that could have happened to us. This is this is going to totally help our numbers. And they're not looking at it from a humanistic standpoint. They're looking from an opportunist standpoint. And when I look at the Charlie Kirk situation, that's what I'm seeing.
There's a lot of that. You know, it's easy to kind of identify when you have big events like this, easy to identify groups, and the group thinks that you might not even been aware of before. And this mm-hmm. has definitely created a lot of awareness. I love creating awareness, because as soon as you have awareness and you see where people stand, and you don't see where they stand with the intent of using it in, you know, like, see that, using it in some way against them. No, so I understand how to communicate more effectively with you. So I understand your context. I understand your background. I understand your belief system, your morals, your ethics, everything. Because I need to understand, I've exhausted this all the time. If someone asked me a question about spirituality, politics, or anything in life, my first question, if I don't know them well, is typically, help me understand yours. Because if I understand yours, I can give you an answer that you're going to be able to hear. Because I want to be able to be a useful individual for you. And in this case, too, we're seeing a lot of that. You're seeing, to your point, Tony, you have some people are like, you know, using this as an example of one side being against us. Then you have this side saying, well, that those people are disgusting because they're so into this. And then you have the people that sit back, I'll put myself in this one, is like, huh, this is all very interesting. It's like you're looking at all these groups, all these people kind of losing their minds or doubling down, and you're like seeing all these amazing behaviors, and you're like, this is a very interesting event that people are capitalizing on tragedy to further an agenda that they had that they never thought of before. Or they it's really interesting, isn't it? It's just nutters.
It is. I mean, it's very bizarre, and especially with this. And I want to get in and like there's obviously a lot of people that have a lot of opinions here. Candace Owen being one of them that has expressed her conspiracy theories, essentially, and not trying to speak, but it basically the whole thing is a lie is what I think you can kind of paraphrase it as for the way that she's been presenting it. But that's where I go back to, okay, if the whole thing is a lie, then how the hell that you're going to have, I don't know any other way of steering around then what? His family's making the whole thing up. They're actors. They're liars. They're paid off by the government. They're not a real fam. Like, what is the story? I mean, what are these things that would have to be in place to make this work? It's very easy for people to throw out terms like crisis actor or this or that, and then to just leave it at that. Like, okay, well then why don't we have this? There's not tons of people going, I was hired as a crisis actor, and this is what I did. You know, in all these horrible things that we see conspiracy theorists jump at. I mean, we saw, you know, with Nutcase Alex Jones and the crazy things he's claimed, and it mobilizes people against people that are just trying to get through their lives. The horrible evilness of Alex Jones and the Sandy Hook shit. I mean, yeah. That sort of thing is sickening. And I'm not saying it's exactly what's going on here, but it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make it's physically, it's mentally impossibility in many conspiracy theories for it to play out because of the human aspect that you would need to have in place for it to work out. Again, we're very still early into this thing, so I'm not saying that that is all of the case here, but that alone, the human element is what I'm really stuck on in this case is, okay, if it's all fake, explain all these other human beings then. Then what happens to them when this is done? Do they go find a job over at the Dairy Queen? And I was a crisis actor previously. I had a fake son that did a fake shooting. Now I make blizzards. I mean, what?
So here's what you do. Well, here's what I do, and I hate making it about me on that one. So when someone says something that seems a little off or interesting, like you have that response, well, maybe, and you try to go one layer deeper and you ask, and I always say, don't ask why questions. Like, why do you think that? Because then you'll get in the world of subjectiveness, which is, you can't go anywhere on that. People are too subjective and it's their own belief system and more, you know, and it doesn't help with relevance. I asked, sure, what? So what would make you, I would respond to that. What would make you say that? You know, what do you have to support that? You see that what question? And then when they start trying to say something or befuddles them and they kind of come to a roadblock of thoughts, well, then I don't give it any more thought. I don't have the bandwidth to entertain your nutterness in my head. And, yeah. I don't dismiss out of, I don't resent anyone or I don't think less of anyone. I just know where to categorize you in my bandwidth of assessing what direction to move in. And if you're coming to your own roadblock on why you think it is what you think, then why do you want me to join it? Now, granted, I will say, when you have more information that you think could support some of these ideas you have, I would love to hear them, because I would love to hear them. Because one thing I think we should all strive to do is really be able to think and speak intelligently about the things that matter to you. So let's move Charlie Kirk's belief system aside, for whether you believed what he stood for or didn't. His ability to understand very clearly and articulate exactly what his belief system was beyond anyone he engaged. Mm-hmm. With exception of few. I thought a few.
Well, at least the ones that he put onto the webs on his social media. It was a very selective, you know, it was glorified jaywalking.
I keep going back to him and Bill Maher. I thought that was one of the best conversations. Like, when he was actually on a legitimate show and not on a college campus. Granted, those college campus, some of those were very good, thoughtful engagements. But, you know, but this challenged both sides, and you could hear both sides clearly articulate their belief system and what they stood for. And here's what you can get out of this. If you love humanity and you love experiencing the greatness of our minds, I can stand here and say I enjoyed listening to Charlie Kirk state what he believed in, because he was very articulate about what he believed in. He's nowhere in here do I say I believe it.
Right.
Sure. I enjoyed listening. And then same with Bill Maher. He really understands what he believes in. Mm-hmm. What great conversation to hear people think through and be able to articulate what their belief system is, what they believe the world is about. Mm-hmm. That helps me then think, how can I think more like that? Not be like them, but how can I keep that Socratic thinking method? So people are trying to capitalize in their different ways of you know, Charlie Kirk's tragic death in all the politically or religiously or all this thing. Mine was, can we use this opportunity to become more curious, you know, to Stacey's point earlier? You know what? No one is. What the hell? Because that actually would solve problems. If we just got more curious, think about the problems we would actually be able to solve. Nah, no one cares.
Why would we want to solve problems? Why would we want to solve problems when we're addicted to outrage?
That's my point exactly. It's because this is a great show. This it world is a great show.
But our nervous systems can't continue on this path. And
you're right.
Oh my God. I've had a really stressful year, and Tony, you saw my meltdown a couple months ago. It was legit. And now I've come back around, and I've stopped watching a lot of news. Like I get weather alerts, so if there's a tornado, I'm going to know about it.
It's a bad day if there's weather for Stacey.
Exactly. So, but honestly, I'm watching cats hitting printers. If you've not seen that, you need to go see that.
We're like, not even a video. It's in her house. It's
well,
happening.
Yeah. I just went blurry again. But the printer is off to my left, and when I print something, the cat comes over and goes whap. Well, that's all I need in my life.
That's a good
and
show.
Some good friends. And I feel like when I wake up in the morning, my heart's not racing anymore. It legit was racing. I had to wear a halter monitor where they're checking to make sure my heart's not about ready to blow up. What was all the consumption of the news and the negativity and the outrage? We become addicted to it. And I think our cortisol levels just go off the chart, and we can't sustain that. We are not made for that.
Stacey, I could do so much deep conversation with you about all this stuff, because one of the ways in which we can baseline and see the world around us for what it is living the Eastern philosophies. I mean, that's why I read the Tao Te Ching every day. It's why I do all these different things to baseline healthy normal. Yeah, and I know Tony got me reading this. My wife is reading it too. Is the Let Them by Mel Robbins.
Yes.
I just left my wife yesterday. Like, here's a talk about a nutty world. She's had a crazy world. But then again, it really helps you emphasize a lot of people have. But if you just take a deep breath and realize the universe is just being what it is, it's not out to get you. You know, and that word, and think about, and here's another word I was thinking of too the other day because of rereading that, is fair. Fair is a fascinating word to think about, because it's not fair that this is happening, fair that this is happening. You know, the universe doesn't have fair or unfair. It just is. And so if you can understand that the world just is what it is, and that you're just this micro speck on it, and there's no fair or unfair, because what's fair and unfair? It's context.
Yeah.
Fair and unfair is our own confirmation biases, and what? It's comparison. Comparison just destroys so many things, because when we're comparing ourselves to someone else, that's the only time we can come up with that word. It's unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Stop comparing and you'll live a lot more in peace.
The only thing you should be comparing yourself to is what you were a few months ago, a few weeks ago, a week ago, yesterday. Yeah. Are you doing better than you did yesterday? Don't compare yourself to anybody else. What did you do yesterday? Are you better today?
Self-reflection? Why would anyone want to do that? That's icky.
I have to be honest. I actually lit some incense listening to Robin today, and I'm sitting here just breathing it in deeply.
Oh my God, we should have like a gift shop that people can go into and buy like the Robin Drake incense.
Oh God.
I'm telling you, I keep it here all the time. There's my Tao Te Ching. Also, I got my, Who Will Cry When You Die by Robin Sharma.
Oh God, that one makes me nervous. I'm wondering who would cry if I died.
Well,
odd question, isn't it? That's a good question for you.
Oh my God, yes.
Who's coming to your funeral?
Me
and Jamie Rake.
Way off top again. So I had, because one of the questions he poses in the book, which I absolutely love, I've said it numerous times, is, so if you had 3 hours left on this planet, what would you spend it doing?
Oh.
Because this is what you should do every day of your life and remind yourself, at least do this once a day. Because if you're not doing this, if this was your last few minutes on this planet, how would you spend it?
Wow.
And I've had these moments multiple times, and I had another one this past Sunday. And I loved every minute of it. And I told my wife when we got off this call, I said, if it ended now, I am completely good. And this is it. So 3 hours. You don't have time for a bucket list. There's no things you can do. There's nothing you can accumulate because you're not bringing anything with you. So what matters the most to you that you would spend the last couple hours of your existence on this planet, because I say planet, because whatever your belief system is, to do? Every Sunday, my family and I, with my wife and my two kids, my two adult kids, my jet pilot, my labor and delivery nurse, we have a FaceTime call every Sunday night, and we catch up on each other's lives. And every now and then, you hit everyone's energy at just the right time, and both my son and my daughter can be the most hilarious people I've ever experienced in my life. They had me, so my son's telling me these amazingly horrible crass jokes, because as jet pilots, one of the things they do before they do every briefing, before they go do these missions, there's the joke of the day. And I got to tell you, jet pilots are not telling politically correct, nice, you know, socially acceptable jokes. And so my son tells a joke of the day. My daughter is the one line snarky one that is hilarious as hell. You know, and her fiance is in the background, you know, playing a video game. My wife's on the call. I was rolling on the floor, laughing my ass off. And those are moments I absolutely love. I mean, that's when our dopamine's going, our serotonin, yes, our oxytocin, our endorphins, everything is firing because we're being loved, we're being accepted for who we are, and we're in immense moments of joy. That is also the only moments we remember. We don't remember average days. We only remember really hilarious, great days or really challenging days. So I always say, go forward and make a day you're going to remember. So that is how. And so that's what we should focus on every day. How do we have a great, healthy relationship with the people in our lives, and so that we will be able to say, this was a fantastic day. And it's not by following Nutters.
No, and it's not by sitting here. I'd spend my last time scrolling on TikTok. Nobody's going to answer it that way.
That's a good show.
Then why are we spending the time that we have acting like it's not counting down? It is.
It is.
Why are we doing it?
It is for everybody.
Yeah. It's a very good way to think of it, and I think a good way to wrap up this episode. Robin, thank you as always. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I got a stack of books over here, Sizing People Up, The Code of Trust, Unbreakable Alliances. I'm going to juggle them now. Are we ready?
I want to see this. Can we see this?
No, because I don't want to, it would crash the set, and there's computers here.
Kaboom.
And there's
boards. All right, fine.
It wouldn't work out well, but available wherever books are sold. Great stuff. And the audiobooks are great as well, so do check them out. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up this week of true crime programming on the podcast. For Stacey, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.